call the year before and was turned down. And then, of course, because he was turned down, realized he better get out of baseball and sold it to Baltimore. But he had planned to move the year before because he foresaw that the Browns weren't going to be able to make it against the Cardinals, especially with Bush moving in.
Yeah, I was just curious. I know Baltimore was always a terrific minor league city.
Right.
For a long history. Now, what happened to that franchise? Did Baltimore continue to support a minor league team as well?
No. I don't recall where the franchise was moved. Okay. Havana, Cuba came in the league around that time. And the Havana franchise, I just don't recall. It's easy to look up, but I don't recall.
I could look it up too. I thought maybe it was fresh in your mind.
No.
Okay. So you're with the Sporting News 24 years. Right. What are some of the highlights that you remember? Maybe you, is that what you're doing there with that little project?
Well, there were a couple things. Some things which sort of relate to what Saberites do.
Okay.
In 1946, was it, that feller struck out 348. And the question was, did he break Rube Waddell's record? Somehow I got working on Rube Waddell's record with the help of a fellow in Toledo, I think, I believe the Toledo Blade had a correspondent in Washington. I'm not sure if Joe Simonick was involved. I don't think Joe was involved at that time. But anyway, we got play-by-plays of a lot of the games that Waddell pitched to see how many strikeouts he actually had, and play-by-plays would differ on some of these things. But I had an item in the Sporting News at that time about that particular rule. And then in 1953, actually the 54 guy, but the 53 Sporting News, I changed Nat Lajoie from a 401 batting average back to 422 for the year 1901. What presumably happened there, there are two Sabre guys that should deserve a lot of credit. They're both deceased now. John Tattersall of Philadelphia and Hass. I can't think of his first name now. Alex Hass of Berkeley, California. Both had sent into the Sporting News a record, day-by-day record of Nat Lajoie's 1901 season. One came up with 229 hits, as I recall. One came up with 232, looking through the box score. Now, you have to remember, in 1901, each paper, doubtless, compiled its own box score. The guy covering the game may have covered it, or the guy in the newspaper office.
Was there an official score?
There was an official score. But the press box, they didn't have press boxes the way they had in later years, so the guys might have been separated a good bit. And sometimes one writer would score it as a hit, the other writer or the official scorer would score it as an error. And so your box scores differed. And that could affect your hits, obviously.
Was there an official score book in which the official scorer kept score?
I don't think there is today an official score book.
No.
Somebody's appointed official scorer. He fills out an official score sheet after the game
and
sends it to the league. And the league statistician looks at it, and if he sees mistakes, he writes back. And 30 years ago, I know, one of the statisticians, the American League statistician, told me how he wrote somebody, and the guy writes back, that's the way it happened. The way I sent it in is the way it is.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even make the corrections that were obviously needed. So it was by hook or crook on some of these things, guessing by golly. But anyway, with that information, I pursued it, and what presumably happened was that the official averages were issued first in Chicago, which was the American League headquarters, Van Johnson, and one of the Chicago papers had 229 hits. Somebody either they didn't have photocopy. They probably had press sheets sent out to some of the other papers, and a 9 smudged a little bit, looks like a 0. Mm-hmm. And that is quite obviously what happened. For a number of years, his averages showed Lajoie 220 hits, 422 average. 220 hits comes out to 401 average. So I think it was in 1913 405, not 401. Not the 1918 Spalding record dropped his average from 422 down to 405.
Because of the missing nine bits.
Right, right. So that was apparently the background of that. And that's...
How is it, how are those records today in the Macmillan Dictionary and Baseball America?
I think Total Baseball may have 232 hits plus 229, yes. I think they
found three more.
You want to stop it all? Well, no.
Okay, so it does have 232, correct. We looked it up. So is that 422?
That raises his average even more.
Okay, so he's a little few points. Okay, a few points higher. So that was one of the projects you did there. I was asking for other highlights while you were at the Sporting News.
I began going to the minor league winter meetings each December, starting in 1944 or 45. And the first year or two, I really just was along to see what was happening. And then I began doing some of the writing. The editor did most of it, the big picture. When he retired, when Edgar Brands retired, and I'm not sure what year that was, then I was, in effect, the head writer, the lead writer, for the winter meetings. Lowell Reidenbaugh went along for several years, and then Oscar Kahn and I would cover them. And I'm not sure what year it was that we went from the minor league meetings directly to the major league meetings and covered them too. But so we covered both the majors and minors for a few of them my last year there.
Well, tell me a little something about the minor league meetings. Who came and...
Oh, the minor league meetings were big time back in the 40s and 50s.
How many leagues would be invited and who represented?
Every league was there.
Every minor league?
Every league was there. The league presidents had votes. The big thing at way back in the late 40s and early 50s was legislative, because the majors were starting to intrude and taking over more, and then when television came, the intrusion became terrible. So the minor leagues were trying to pass rules to govern their own operations and trying to put through rules that the major leagues would accept as far as not televising into our territory, things of that kind.
Who represented the minor league teams? The owners?
Almost always the owner, yeah, because again, the minor league team would be operated by the owner, maybe one paid employee, yeah, and then hangers-on or errand boys.
And where would they meet?
They would meet in the big cities of the minor leagues, usually. Los Angeles, Baltimore, Miami. It would be moved around different venue every year.
Okay.
Someplace I just recently copied all of that off, but I don't have it handy.
And would they meet for like a week? Or
no, the meeting usually was about 4 days, as I recall. 4 days. Well, one of the big features, and this was usually one of the first big features, was the draft by the major leagues of minor league players, which was a very big thing way back when, much bigger than it is right now.
Now, we're talking here around 1950 or so. At that time, how many of the minor league teams, what percentage were farm clubs, or signed up as an affiliate of a major league club?
I suppose.